If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host DK, and with me today, as always, is my lovely co-host, Layover Lou.
Oh yeah, you might find me in your state, just stuck for an hour or two.
Sorry, okay, that's bad. Is there a story?
Well, I mean, I take plenty of flights. I take at least 3 or 4 flights a month at this point. Layovers are nothing new. But I do think it was just kind of funny that the most recent one, all of us were kind of confused as to what was happening. We literally sat on the tarmac for 2 hours before they let us off. Then 30 minutes later, called us back onto the plane. And apparently it was, get this, LA was just too cold. As a guy who's natively from LA, I have never heard a more blasphemous statement. But hey, if it's for our safety, I'll take it. But LA being too cold has never been a situation I've ever lived through.
That's funny. I was literally talking about, we don't realize it when we live here because it's very easy to forget.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the idea of like, you don't think about, most people most of the time don't think about how they don't have a headache right now, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So you like live here and you like forget that we're living in this amazing
temperature, climate.
Amazing climate all year round. When other people were having snowstorms, I'm outside in a t-shirt.
I was talking about this with DJ Flawless, who is the guy I see every time we're performing with X and stuff like that. We were asking him like, hey man, how's the weather? Cause we just did a show, a couple of days ago in, Mescalero, New Mexico, at this, Indian reservation, casino kind of place. And he was like, oh man, I thought it was going to be colder. We're like, how's the weather in New York? He's like, horrible.
Right.
Because apparently it's like, it's snowing, it's not snowing, it's snowing, it's not snowing. So it's like every day is just kind of like, you're living day to day to see how your travel is going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
How your travel. Yeah. So it's like,
are you taking the train? Is it cool to walk? Is it a 2 sweater kind of day? Is it a 1 no sweater kind of day?
Well, the one thing that like does throw everybody here in LA for a loop is like if it rains.
Oh my God. Like, it's so annoying.
We have a Mediterranean climate. So
yeah.
It almost always rains. Like pretty heavy for about 2 weeks a year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just like, it's just a small enough window mm-hmm. that there's really no incentive for the infrastructure of the city, of the state, yep. to, or of the city to do anything about it. So like yeah. everything just gets flooded yeah. and, you know, everything just gets flooded and we don't know how to keep that water in the reservoirs, like to its fullest potential. And, yeah, it's just like kind of, it always throws everybody in for a surprise, even though it happens every single year. It's to the point where like culturally, like people like refuse to drive when it rains because it's like so yeah. little time that it rains and it does have such a big impact because of the lack of preparedness because it rains so little, you know, like.
Not only that, but I heard the funniest way to find out if somebody's from LA or not when you see a California license plate. And I swear to God, I never thought about this until I heard it. And I was like, oh my God, you're fucking right. You know, somebody's from LA when their windshield wipers are way too old. When they're just not even, they don't even work anymore. Like, do you ever change them out? And it's like, no, because it never fucking rains. And when it does, I'm just going from point A to point B. I'll be back. Like, and like you said, like 2 weeks later, the rain's gone.
That's so funny. I haven't, yeah. that's a good reminder to wash, to swap out my windshield wipers.
Yeah, right, the only reminder we get as LA people, like not even the, when you go to a mechanic or any like Jiffy Lube or anything of that nature, I've never gotten the recommendation to change my windshield wipers. They don't even check them.
That's so funny. Okay, quick new thing that I want to try to do.
Sure.
I might switch it to the end of the episodes, but we're going to try to do this every week from now on, or at least like once a month more regularly. Welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. We just want to give a shout out to our exclusive subscribers. We got a lot of new exclusive Patreon subscribers. MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. We got Ty Ty, Sean Jones, John Stupiello, Andy Reynolds, Christian Cash, Brian Suarez, Max, Chris McAllister, Sebastian Monroe, Desperate Banjo, Stefan Pigmore, Dane Bednar, Civil Service, Daniel Kelly, Rob Shoemaker, DJ Loop Beats, Rob, Mr. Psychotronic, Mickey B, Rebecca Haven, John Murphy, Jared Barnum, ADO, Jason Parsley, Mighty Made Fellows, and a few others.
Shout out to Mighty Made Fellows for... always he's, been, dude, he's been
yeah
always
him around. And Jason Parsley yeah. and ADO are like right
but
here.
I want to give a shout out to two names. You're gonna have to repeat one of them because I might be butchering it, but Andy Reynolds, with a name like that, if you don't do voiceover, if you don't go into acting, if you don't do something in the public sector of entertainment, like you're wasting the name, my good sir.
You like
Andy Reynolds, like that is just, I don't know why, but I'm like, are you in the Marvel universe? Like, Jesus Christ, that's so a name. Funny. And
you
then
like
Psychotronic,
name.
Was it?
Mr. Psychotronic.
Mr. Psychotronic. You have to make, like, I don't know if this is going to, if this is, I can't, I'm going to try to describe it. It may not land. So I apologize. But there's like, that name gives me the idea of like music where like, it's like very glitchy, but it's cool. It's very underground. Not necessarily electronic, not necessarily rock, but it's just like hard hitting drums and everything. But then you got like the cool glasses, almost Matrix like and everything. And you're just so chill about it. But there's like a vibe of coolness going on. So Mr. Psychotronic, you got the name for it. I mean, I hope you're already making music. If you are, please send me some. I'm very curious. The name sold me.
That's so funny. All right. Well, that's a good dumb tangent for the show. That's our mandatory 5-minute banter.
Take a shot.
At the beginning of every show. Anyway, today's episode is pretty interesting. We don't know how it's going to go. We're kind of winging it, and we have to preface that this is going to be a lot of like our own personal experience. Mm-hmm. There's probably going to be some nuggets, things for you to think about. That's kind of the idea. It's like we want to give you our personal anecdotes, personal experiences to have you think about things from your own perspective. The things that we talk about are not necessarily exclusive to how things work. These are not like mandatory steps. These are just how we think about it, how we got to where we are. And we want to talk about like the first 5 years of trying to do this full time. And I think that that's obviously very different for everyone based on time commitment and based on, you know, family obligations, location, around the world, the industry, as well as we have a very large demographic, sorry, a diverse demographic of people pursuing different things. We have like film composers in this, mm-hmm. in our listenership. We have obviously mix engineers, mastering engineers, producers, artists that are wanting to learn how to mix. I mean, there is this like common denominator of engineering within our listenership, but it is pretty spread out across the board. So take this with a grain of salt. As they often said in Six Figure Home Studio, they said that this is an information buffet, just kind of pick and choose what you like. But we want to talk about the first 5 years. Actually, Lou brought up something before. He wanted to call it the surviving the first 5 years of our career. I think that's like a really valid point. But the reason I didn't want to call it that is because I don't want people to over-identify with the difficulty and the bad things about pursuing this career. I mean, it's we're in a very blessed state to like place to be able to even conceive an idea of having a career in something like art, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not always true across all time and places, right? This is very
unique.
And it's
such a spectrum of careers where like there is no job application for the majority of the work that you see people doing at a certain scale. It's just kind of a thing that with follow through time and focus, like it just happened to land that way. There's no job application for being an artist.
Right.
Yeah.
I do think that like, it's kind of like, what does it mean to have a career in music? I'm sorry. This is just top of mind, 'cause I was just reading, reading some Buddhist literature here. It's like the idea of like what makes a car or a pen, right? If I were to take apart all the parts of a car, is there a specific piece of the car that makes it, that gives it the defining, the status of a car? Is the engine without any of the other components, is that a car? No, a car is a combination of everything. The parts itself have no inherent meaning or identity, right? So in that similar way, like that's kind of how a music career is. There's nothing like, there is no individual experience or a thing that you must do in order to make it into the music industry.
Yeah, there's no one guaranteed path. And I think it's worth watching. I know there was a bunch of clips of it, but I think it was like just a full on hang between Baines, TZO, and David Nazi. Basically, they did talk for a little bit about like this mentality of the grind and what it means. And some people are still in that grind, even in the successful points of what other people would say, like the high points of their career, even if they don't fully see it as the high points. Because even at the top 10%, there's still a lot of work to be done. But in the first 5 years, you're likely, and it's not impossible, but you know, it's not likely you're going to be in that top 10% at first. So we definitely want to like hit on things that are like very early on, things that we kind of had to adapt to, because me and DK are beyond our first 5 years, but we can definitely speak on the things that we had to do. But everybody's path is uniquely different. You know, there's no one common thread that made us successful or not successful. We can say a few things that did help a lot, but you know, we just want to hit on a couple points and not over focus on one of them, because there is no one thing that's going to save your career, so to speak.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, the car example is funny because that's about identity and how you perceive yourself, or how you should perceive yourself as a collection of parts. When I was making the tangent of what it means to be in the music industry or to be pursuing. So it's not necessarily a parallel conversation, but just a unique way of looking at it, trying to codify like how you should be perceiving yourself in the industry. I will say there are some common denominators among most people that are working in the industry. This is not always the case, but maybe this is something that I'm projecting that I want everybody to have, is a genuine, or that I find that most people do, is a genuine love of music. Now, there are those in the music industry that are driven by the need for validation and clout, and they use music as the medium to do that. But that most people in the industry across the board love music in a way that is difficult, oftentimes difficult to properly dictate or to properly articulate. articulate. They might just be hyper creatives that just that could have done anything, but then just stuck to music, right? And there are those that like had perfect pitch and like there's no other, just the blinders are on and they have no other option. They've always wanted to do music, you know? So it's different for everybody. I will say the first 5 years is very fun and it can be very fun. It can be extremely fulfilling. I will say that like there's never been a time of course it was hard, but the cool thing about, because I started young, right? Like, Lou, I think you started a little bit younger than me pursuing.
I was 18, 19, owned my first studio at 21.
Okay, so I was owned my first studio at like 22, 23. Mm-hmm. But I didn't fully pursue music as a career until I was about 22.
Yeah. So, yeah, like, I feel like we jump in it. And then like the commitment comes later.
Right. But I mean, remind me, you weren't in college at the time. Did you do college at all?
I did stages of college. I went to Pasadena Community College where I did take like Pro Tools classes, guitar lessons, things like that. I was already
playing
guitar.
Were you in college when you committed to music?
I was heavily considering my second stage of education, which was SAE. And I joined SAE. I actually joined SAE. And then 2 months later opened my second studio. I mean, my first studio. So
you were like, still a student by, as far as like time allowance.
Yeah, but I had already been working. Like when I went to school, I had already been doing sessions with like Jazzy Faye and Jeremiah. Mm-hmm. And that was like very early. Like I was still figuring it out, getting in trouble for like the most basic things. And that's why I wanted to go to school again, because I wanted to sharpen the knife and see if there was something that, you know, because the streets can teach you a lot, but sometimes books and mentors and, you know, lessons plans can sometimes help you out structure things in a way that feel a little more familiar in the way you receive information. At the time, Pensado's Place was just starting. Like, I think it was just called In the Lair, where it was just Dave just kind of showing something cool. He likes the Waves Doubler and check this out. You know, I think it's really nice.
Right.
You know, and that was it. That was like the core. What was it? Home Recording Revolution, I think, was a big deal.
With Graham Cochran. Yep.
Graham Cochran. Yeah. So like there wasn't a lot of content creators that were really doing like really big things. But early adopters of, you know, that type of platform were very helpful and forever.
Warren Hewitt as well.
Warren Hewitt. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah, at that time, there was some content creation happening, not as much as we have now, but there was still like a reliable amount. And myself, I am quite the autodidact, like I'm the self-learner all the way. And it was still enough for me to be able to start my career, for sure. Absolutely. I will say another couple differences, just so we have context for our advice, is that Lou, you've been in LA the entire time.
Yes. And you're somebody who made the move to LA.
Right. So I came in, I did my first 5 years in Utah. So a much smaller music market, and a different music market. So so we're going to talk about that too, because I took a very different route, more as an entrepreneur. And so we'll talk a little bit about that. But the cool thing, going back to the idea here, is that, and again, the first 5 years is incredible. I think can be incredible, is incredible. It is very, very hard, but it's also especially if you start young, it's very exciting. Your prefrontal cortex is not fully developed. You don't have the capability to really think or fear about the future. You're just really into this thing. And oftentimes, become hyper obsessed with this thing. And you're just like trying to figure things out. You don't know what's happening and you don't fully hear compression, for example. So you're just like doing a lot of tests, which comes from a deep, sincere place of passion, right?
Yeah.
You're very passionate about this. You're borderline naive, overly optimistic, not at all, probably not very cynical, right? And, it's just like a fun place to be. Yes, it's difficult for a lot of people that like are trying to, if you have, for example, like if you start your career older where you now have, you know, what is that called? Lifestyle inflation. You have other people to, you have a responsibility for, you have a mortgage to pay for. The first 5 years becomes a different experience. But if you're like in college or starting young, even if you're in high school, it's like, it's very blissful. It can be very blissful. And you can live on pizza every day. Or burritos every day, or ramen every day, and like
for
it
me,
doesn't
it was
affect
beefy
you.
Beefy 5-layer burritos.
There you go. It's like the point is like you can eat shit every single day and live and just work 100 hours a week and it doesn't bother you at all, right? Like it doesn't faze you. As you get older, it's like you sleep a little weird and it's like your shoulder's out for the week. And you know, like
it's called welcome to your 30s is the way I like to tell people.
All right, little flex. So 2 days ago, as of this recording, Japan lost to Venezuela in the WBC in a big upset. Congrats to Venezuela, well earned. But that being said, I let out my angst. Yesterday, I hit 2 home runs and went 5 for 5 in my softball game, just letting it all out. And it's funny because usually
is for
the umpire,
Japan.
I mean, it is just a rec league. So the umpire, like, it's not super hard fast, but he usually doesn't like side with a person or a side. But like, I'm 32 coming up with 3 kids, and I'm easily nowhere near the youngest person on the field. And easily the fastest guy on the field. Even the umpire's like, damn, this guy's fast.
Look at
this
him
guy's
go.
Quick. And that feels good relative to the age. Anyway, sorry, that was unrelated. Just wanted to flex this fun experience that I had. I'm quick as hell.
I'm fast as fuck, boy.
Fast as fuck, boy? Okay. Anyway, we're going into, getting into a tangent here. The first 5 years can be awesome. That's the reason why I want to avoid calling it like surviving your first 5 years, because there is a lot of like scarcity, like surviving, like getting through, getting to the point where you can pay rent, which I think like 5 years is a decent, I don't want to call it a benchmark and let people like feel like failures for not getting there in 5 years. But like 5 years is a good enough time where it's like you're likely... It's not unreasonable to say like that's a good time frame to be able to pay rent.
And it's a difference between paths. And once again, there's no one path that's technically better because each one has its benefit. It's kind of like, I hate to describe it this way, but I'm just going to go ahead. It's kind of like playing some form of RPG where you have like the wizard class, you have the warlock class, you have the warrior, you have whatever. Each one of them has its pros and cons. So depending on what you choose early on in the game, you know, it depends how you're going to start up. But eventually you all level up and you all kind of fall in a similar lane, but you have different traits about you that kind of lean towards different paths. For instance, you could go the studio route for a big commercial studio, but you might have to literally eat shit for a while, you know, because it's an unpaid job in most cases. You are not, you know, very highly regarded at all in your position. It's not that they don't see you as a good person or anything like that, but you're just not very important to the machine yet. You haven't really proven yourself, and you may not have many opportunities to prove yourself because the projects that are coming through those doors need people who are proven already. So you're waiting for that opportunity. And in 5 years, you might find that opportunity, but it may take about 2-3 years for that. Versus there are people who, you know, just did the Craigslist route and stuff like that. Like I did a lot of Craigslist early on because Craigslist was a thing. Facebook Marketplace wasn't really a thing yet. Fiverr and all that kind of stuff wasn't really big. But, you know, you're just putting yourself out there for even the most shit paying gigs. For the most random people. And I've met some cool people through it. And I've met some people I'm glad I never saw again through it, you know? So there's still a lot of eating shit and having to figure it out, because if somebody's going in to pay and you don't know what you're doing, egg on your face kind of situation. Like you got to make it right. And once again, you go to a big studio, you get to learn from the big boys and the boards and everything. So you have early access to really big things. While if you just try to solo dolo it the whole entire way, you know, you don't have access to these things. You have to work your way up to buying these things and getting hands on with it. So each path is so wildly different, but I think there's something really cool about these early days that you touched on, which is you kind of see what's on the other side of the door, and it's really exciting. Like finding new information and putting new tools to the test is so exciting that you kind of forget you're eating shit. You know what I mean? Like, it's not even a whole nibble or eat it whole situation. It's just like, hold on, you said you could do what with the board? And like, your mind is exploding with new information, new possibilities, new method routes, and you start developing your own workflow. And then you start becoming this unique individual in the industry. And that is your unique path. You start using all the information that you learned throughout this stage. And it's so inspiring that like, you just kind of now become your own person in the industry.
Right.
And people recognize that, because when I see my friends, I don't see people that everybody does the same thing. Like, there's a lot of mixing engineers, there's a lot of recording engineers, but not everybody has the same exact approach. We all use the same exact tools, but we have similar, if not very different approaches to one another. Our communication style is different. Our approach to being in a room with certain types and things like that, and how we move in that session. Like, there may be similarities because we're used to some common faces that everybody will deal with. And then there's people who only exclusively work with certain people. So like, once again, like your workflow, your communication style, your the needs of your delivery are different from project to project, you know? And sometimes you get to work with each other and it's learning about how to work with each other, you know? Cause I've mastered for DK, I've mastered for Bob and Friends, Exact and all them. And it's just, you know, hey, listen, if everybody is here doing things and everybody's uniquely different, what sets you apart is literally the way you came up. It's kind of setting the stone. So when we say, or when I say, like, surviving your first 5 years, it's partially because at a certain point, you have to know that you're going to eat shit. Like, you're going to have really low paying gigs, which is something I wanted to hit on. We are going to have adaptations, like, for instance, burnout. Burnout is something I've dealt with a couple times, both in high points of my career and low points of my career. It could be surrounded by like tons of long hours, doubt, things like that. And then, you know, there's a ton more, but I definitely want to make sure we hit a couple topics just because there are things that we all deal with, and they do shape how we each uniquely approach them.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just going to speak on my own experience, and I'm happy to hear yours too. I was nowhere near burnout the first 5 years. First five years, I was like anti-burnout. I was like, there's nothing that could possibly stop me. I want to talk about
fast truck in your path.
literal traffic. But I was in Utah, so it wasn't as bad as it is here.
What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage 1. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Okay, so there's some also practical advice, like some things that I think were helpful to the first 5 years is like not specializing in anything yet. You're just constantly testing different things. You're doing live sound. Maybe you'll get into live sound. Maybe you'll get into like film, TV. Maybe you'll do like a thing of Foley. A lot of times, like, this is where school can help, not just like your colleagues and other students. But like, some of these classes will force you to do things like test things in different sectors that you wouldn't
have
done.
No,
like,
interest in.
I had a Foley class, or a part of my class had Foley, and then a part of my class where I had to do a jingle for a commercial, and then another class where I had to compose for a commercial, or like to do sound design and for video game stuff, right? Like, there's like, and then on top of that, like, learn a console, learn a live console, and then as far as like not just school but as well as outside of school, like, I was saying yes to everything. And I think I think most people should say yes to everything. Like, there are a very, very few select people where like specialization starts immediately, either by a decision or by situation. For example, like if you get into a situation where your family knows someone, or you know someone, and or you get into a position that you're interning for someone or assisting for someone that requires a specialization of skill, that's a very rare scenario. But most of the time, a lot of people at this stage are experimenting, trying things out. I would actually recommend not saying no to many things. I do like the idea that, like, you know, for example, like Baines and Tizio and Mixbus TV, David was talking about the hustle culture. There is a mis conception with this hustle culture of like eating shit. I mean, I love the idea of eating shit, this David Goggins mentality. I think one of my favorite quotes, I forgot who it's by. It's in the book, The Hard Thing About Hard Things. David Horowitz, that's who it was. And there's the quote that he has in his book is like, if you gotta eat shit, don't nibble. And I love that quote. There's a time and a place for that quote. There's a time and a place for David Goggins type mentality. But there is, at the first 5 years, I perceive it as not very much David Goggins because it's very, very volunteer. A lot of it's, you're not like, there's no boulder that you're pushing up a hill. You are obsessed with this because you're super passionate and you are aware that you don't know much. You're very humble. And because all of that leads to being hyper aggressive and very active in the learning process. After the first 5 years, like it might become more self-aware, like, okay, I have to work hard and I don't want to. It's like I'm trying to find more balance in my life. But the first 5 years, there's like usually a lack of balance and there's no need for balance. Like you love the grind and the hustle. It's like very exciting. So like go ahead and say yes to everything. Right. Mm-hmm. Don't create boundaries too early. Like it's a time. The second thing is like, it's a time to learn, like go out of your way, like learn. Don't feel insecure about not being taught by someone. Do not wait to be taught by someone. Like go and learn, read books, watch YouTube videos, say yes to things that you're not so sure about. Like, I don't know if I can do this. Put yourself in situations where you have to learn, like make mistakes, go out and like find out that you're going to be blamed for everything in the live sound situation. And that's just how it works. You know, like,
trust me because of that, whenever I'm not going to name names, but I was working with somebody this past couple of weeks planning for like even this weekend's thing. And literally something that's just wildly out of my control. Apparently somebody along the chain received the old writer. I don't even have a copy of this old writer, but they thought we were asking for, get this, a 32 channel board with 8 compressors, 4 graphic EQs, and 2 noise gates. I'm like, I'm sorry, in today's day and age, how the fuck would that console make sense? Digital boards have everything built into them, right? But it was literally just communication issues. Sometimes early on is learning how to be better efficient with your communication issues. Apparently somebody just didn't read the emails I sent out, and that was the thing. And guess what? It's my job to figure it out anyways. You know, sometimes learning to eat shit is also knowing how to think on your feet, which is a skill set that you can learn in studio, you can learn live, but like you said, in live, like unfortunately that's a very true thing. Even if you didn't have the tools you asked for, agreed to, whatever, you still got to figure it out. The show must go on, baby.
Right. So anyway, I will say that in the first 5 years of a career, it is typical to eat shit, as we keep saying. But the cool thing about the first 5 years is that it's so new that it doesn't feel like you are, especially if you start younger. Now, if you're starting at 40, this thing could change entirely, right? We understand that. But I think for the typical experience, someone that's in college, before college, after college, little after college, it's kind of the similar. Like, your lifestyle sucks. Like, you're not in a nice place. You don't have other people that you're responsible for. You don't know much about money, and you don't have the brain development to think about, care about that stuff too much, right? And that's like fine. Hopefully at this point too, part of the grind is just meeting people. Like, you're just meeting people constantly. Just like if you're really into a sport or really into like this specific book or anime, you'll like naturally just meet people that are also into that, that subgroup of people, right?
Part of meeting people is also getting out there, right? Like, no matter what you're into, whether it's career or not, like, I'm actually curious to check out that cafe you've been helping out with.
Oh, the Manga Lounge?
Yeah, dude, that looks cool. Yeah. Because I don't know anybody outside of you that I know reads or like collects mangas at all. And so it's one of those things, like if I wanted to meet people in that realm and build a community in that realm, like I'd have to go to it. You have to be proactive. Yeah.
Right. We'll talk about Manga Lounge later. That was very cool. Thank you for your help on that, by the way, with the commercial speakers.
I didn't do shit.
No, you sent me a couple links that I looked at that gave me good direction. Anyway, sorry, that's another time. That's a conversation for off the pod. But at this point, too, another piece of advice that I would give, Lou, and people will disagree with me. Like, for example, like there are many Mix with the Masters, like Tony Maserati explicitly said, you should never do anything for free. And there's some nuance to that that I agree with. Because later in that interview with Mix with the Masters, where he said explicitly, you should do nothing for free, but it doesn't have to be money. That's an important note. We're going to talk about that in the top, like buyer psychology. We could talk about that.
Yeah. Right?
But at this point, the first 5 years, I should not have to, like, if it's to the point where you're wondering, like, should I not do this for free? Like, if you're like, it's the first 5 years, like you should be wondering about your value and trying to make money. That's the point of this.
And but learning also, how to build the communication, I guess you could say, practice communication of needing some form of payment.
100%. But at the same time, and here's where I'm going to push back on this. Mm-hmm. The first 5 years, like you should love what you're doing so much. You should be so focused on the learning aspect of this job, of the meeting people, of saying yes to everything, that doing everything, anything for free is like not even a thought to have.
Yeah.
In fact, the problem, like the typical problem, this is a problem. This is not a good thing. This is bad business advice, but I think exemplifies a great mindset is that you continue to discount your services because you'd rather work on something than to be told no. Like for the first 5 years, it's like, I want to work with you so bad that I'm going to do the bad business practice of like, oh, dude, I'll give you 50% off. Just let me work on this. Like that's a really good state of mind to be in. Horrible business practice. Very great state of mind. Like you're so obsessed with this that like I can't help but give discounts or like do things for free because I want to learn. Like
I think one of my favorite, so I don't want to say who it was, but me and you know him and maybe he said this in front of you, but I remember asking about like management, things like that. And I think at the time me and you were both like considering like what it means to be in a position to have a manager be interested. This is like before you had one and stuff like that. This is a couple of years ago, but, you know, our friend had said, you know, I have a manager mainly because I keep doing things for free. Like he likes working with people. He loves what he does. And sometimes when he meets somebody who has a really cool product, but just doesn't have the means to make it happen, he'll just offer help. But then people get used to that. And so then that's where management comes in for the second, third project. Like, hey, that was a one time. Let's not get used to this. So the manager is kind of playing like backup superhero, like, hey, get me out of this situation. Because unfortunately, early on, and this is where I wouldn't say I necessarily push back on the don't do things for free or don't expect or don't give the expectation of nothing in return kind of thing. Like you should, for your own health in your career, you should love what you do that you're willing to do it for free. But I guess my only pushback on that is you're building your resume more than you're charging money early on in your career. And if nothing releases, then what are you doing for free? Which is just hanging out, which is okay. If you're friends with this person, if you're friends with this person and you're just vibing out and you just want to practice techniques, there is no fucking better time to do it than when it's for fucking free. When you're getting paid and it's something serious, sometimes tried and true is all you need and all you should really be focused on, because you trying out new shit and then fucking it up for everybody else in the pipeline is not ideal and you don't want that reputation. Now, with that said, if you do everything you're supposed to do and you want to sauce it up, like by adding some extra tracks where you did record something through a parallel compressor and things like that, but you still have the original audio too, so that in case the parallel compressed one is fucked up, they can still go back to the regular, then great. That's the A+ method, which is do what the core job is plus more. But when you're early on and you're doing things for free, there's no better time to try something new. Just fuck around. My favorite thing that I ever tried was putting overheads on the floor, pointing at an angle on the floor towards the drums and picking it up. And like, I didn't have room mics or anything, but holy shit, that bring out the room. And if you haven't tried it before and you're curious enough and you got a drummer that's willing to hang out, you want to do a YouTube video together just for the fuck of it, what better time to do it? Like, just crack open some beers, or in DK's case, maybe some virgin beers. But, like, either way, just hang out. Just have some fucking fun, man. But just remember that if you're talking about, like, a client is hitting you up saying that they have no budget, you really like what they're doing, I think something that you can communicate that is both a very directed point and very a clear communication of, like, down the line, we need to make something happen is, and I did this once and it worked out for me, but I only did it once. So I don't know if it would work out for everybody, which was, I'm willing to do it for free, but typically I charge. So my agreement with you is you have to release the music. If you do not release it by X date, I will own the masters.
Oh, that's an interesting take on
yeah,
that.
Because I'm building a resume. I'm not charging you. So I'm not doing it for the money at this moment. But, like, I also don't want to waste my time with people who are saying they want to do this. They need a certain amount of dedication, time, and you're putting all this effort on your end. But if they never release it, then you're not building a resume. And if you're doing it for something that you're looking to have on your resume, then there's nothing wrong with putting it up on SoundCloud and everything. But because it's not your music, you can't just release their music. So with the commitment of, you have to release it because I'm doing this for you and I'm doing this for myself. I want to showcase more of my work surrounding this genre, this type of work, whatever it may be. But if it's not releasing, it doesn't actually help me. So let's make an agreement. So you're still doing it for free. You're still giving them ownership of their recordings, masters, whatever, but setting a timeline, a deadline, and just saying, hey, listen, we just got to get it done at a certain point. We can't sit on this for 5 years and then you agree to release it when nobody cares. And I'm already moved on to bigger and other things. Like, we're here working now. Let's put a deadline together. Let's make an agreement. So you don't have to charge money, but communicating some form of boundary where it's saying, I don't want to waste my time, is okay.
Right. And I think that's, like, really smart, right?
Mm-hmm.
I will say, though, at the first 5 years of that stage, like, that's something that you learn afterwards.
Yeah.
I feel like the first 5 years, you should be so in love with music. Like, ideally, you love it so much that that's not even a thought to have.
Yeah.
Like, you honestly
You're almost
don't
intimidated
even care.
By making the offer.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you honestly, like, like, not that you should do that. Like, that's a really good thing. But the other side of it is, like, hopefully you're not, like, if you're thinking about that in the first 2 years of your career, buddy, you're overthinking shit. Like,
yeah.
In the first 2 years.
If you don't know how to do shit and you're putting deadlines on people, you're too soon.
Like, but, you should just be so obsessed. Like, ideally, you should be so obsessed where, like, you don't even care if they release it. Like, you just want
you almost,
to do
You're okay
something.
Just being in the room.
Right,
to
right, right.
Pick up
that
some
is
pieces.
Super smart. Right. So it's the same sort of idea of, like, at the first 5 years of your career, like, it would be a normal symptom to be completely obsessed with gear.
Yeah.
And, like, you're, like, doing A-B comparisons. You maybe even have this naive belief that, like, analog gear is better. Right. And listen, as you get older, you'll gain some wisdom and some knowledge. I think mostly just wisdom, that it doesn't matter that much. Analog gear doesn't matter. But, like, it would be dumb for me as the older senpai to tell you not to test gear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? You should be wanting to AB gear yourself. Right. Like, when we say we don't like the CA100G, what we're not saying is don't use the CA100G. We're saying use it and be open-minded that you may not like it.
Yeah. Like, don't just look at the price tag and be like, this is the best. Because, okay, just for clarification, when me and DK met, I think the CA100G was, under 10? Was it 9,500 at the time or was it already 10,500?
No, I think it was under. It was like 95.
It was like 95 when we first met each other. And now it's retailing at 16,000, I think it is.
Right.
So we're talking about like a almost 50% increase in its retail price. And guess what's changed? Jack shit.
Right.
Once again, don't look at my point of that is not to say, oh, look at them charging more for the whatever, manufacturing, inflation, whatever. Blah.
Right.
But point is, don't look at the price tag. Look to confirm information for yourself. Is the LA-2A the best opto, or is it the CL-1B, or are we looking at LA-3As for FETs and stuff? Like, it just doesn't matter at a certain point. Like, just try it out. Try to figure it for yourself, but don't overlook at hype.
Right. You need to come. The important part is like when it comes to that sort of like higher level advice, like use your ears. Analog gear doesn't. There's no advantage to it. Like these are all things that you should come to your own conclusion. Mm-hmm. Like go through the phase. Like it is important to go through this phase of overthinking about gear, over caring for gear, of like thinking that price tag equals value and like just trying stuff out. Like that is an important part of the learning process. It is smarter to say, to believe us when we say that analog gear doesn't matter. But it is honestly, I don't think it's very wise for us to suggest that and for people to believe that at the early stages of your career. Like I think if smart comes from the brain and wise comes from the heart, then the wise thing to do is ignore any single advice about how analog gear is not better and just do it. For the love of the game, try to get a hold of some tape, get a hold of some analog gear, do A/B tests, and like,
You can do what I did, which was, at the time, once again, it was Craigslist. So maybe go Facebook market diving for like old mixers. Like I remember I bought a Yamaha. Was it a PM1000? At the time, they were like $500-$600 for like the board, right? Nowadays, you're seeing them sell for like $3,000-$4,000. But like that was everybody's like, that's the Japanese. It's the Japanese version of a Neve. It's so good. And I remember using it and I'm like, early on, maybe I was naive to the sound of it, maybe whatever. But I just remember listening to it. And I'm like, this sounds like shit. I'm sorry. Like, I'm sure like if it was cleaned up or something, maybe there was something wrong with this one. Maybe it was just too old and not taken care of or something. But I just remember looking at this. And I'm like, this is the worst like $500 I spent. You know what I mean? But later on, I'm seeing people are now like racking those channel strips and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's like for four channels is $1,000 or 1,500, somewhere around there. And you see people swearing by them, but I still go back to my personal experience, which is like, there may be some hype around it, but that hype was demystified once I actually got in front of it. So do your best to get in front of these things. That's where like a studio internship, like I mentioned earlier, like could actually be the beneficial route early on because you get access to the gear in front of you, but you also still don't know what you're doing with it. So it may not be the best reference point early on, but it gives you at least an exposure to make a decision for yourself where it's like, right now that I can't afford a CL1B, does the soft tube CL1B suffice or do I really, really need to buy the hardware? You know what I mean? Like start making comparisons, see where technology's at right now and see if, ask yourself why a lot of studios are getting smaller.
Yeah. Learn so much about everything that you say the dumb thing about how converters matter a lot. And the reason why my mixes suck is probably because of the converters. Like go through that stage. I encourage you.
I made a post about the Lavery, the Lavery Gold.
Lavery?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. See, look, I'm saying it wrong because I obviously haven't cared enough about it throughout the years.
12 people know about it.
And it's so I asked a very plain question, which is considering today's technology, is the Lavery Gold still considered the best? You know, and it's funny because.
I saw you ask that.
Yeah. And it was very. It wasn't meant to be inflammatory to ask the question or anything like that, but I noticed that those that own or have owned one were very quick to defend it. Those who understood why it was very unique in the industry were quick to clarify why some people like it and why many people have avoided it. And those who had not used one were very quick to say it's overpriced. But, you know, from everything I was told, hey, man, a lot of people just use it for the clipping. It's a really, really, really nice clipper with uniquely made, all in-house made converters and chips and all that kind of stuff. And that's really cool. So I understand the uniqueness of it. I understand why people wanted to keep it and do certain things, but it's more of a color box than it is a clarity tool, which is very eye-opening, especially once again, given the idea of modern day, technology. Everything's getting better with time. So how is this converter from what, 15 years ago? still considered one of the best. You know, it's an interesting thought. And getting a bunch of responses was really nice. But here's the thing. Nowadays, we have Instagram to ask these questions. And the people that we work with are very, I'd say at our stage of the career, we're friends with many people who have very successful careers, have tons of experience with tons of different gear and everything. And we've gotten the experience of that too. So we have a lot of trust in the people that we're getting our info from. And it's very, very firsthand. We're not talking to like marketing agents and they're telling us this info. We're talking to end users. So it's kind of interesting because early on, we don't really have that luxury. Like I remember coming up, like thinking about talking to Dave Pensado was out of this world. And then, you know, Dave, you know, I hope he's better. You know, getting to talk to him a couple times and seeing the type of person he was so down to earth that I was like, damn, I kind of wish I took an internship at Larrabee. Not Larrabee. He wasn't at Larrabee. He was next door to Bob. What was it? That was Larrabee, right?
No. Well, he was there for a time. I think it was like
Fab Factory. Yeah, Fab Factory. Yeah, so getting to talk to him a little bit like actually kind of shows that a lot of people that you talk to in this industry are very down to earth. And once they get to a certain point, they don't really care about gear. And you start to understand why. Like gear just becomes a color box at a certain point.
Right. Yeah. Again, the wise thing to do would be for us to not necessarily give you our strongest opinions and tell you to avoid it. And the wise thing
just
to do
experience it.
You to experience. Exactly.
Yeah. I think if you go on Instagram, check out District Sound Labs. Really cool dude. But like I liked his progression. I don't know if you followed him for a long time or not, but like this dude at one point was like wall to wall with gear, tons of vintage, some of the best stuff. He really knows his stuff when it comes to his gear. But a lot of that, he says, and it comes from actually being able to play with it. So you invested a lot to be able to play with it a lot and to really understand it. And for some people, that's what it looks like. So, you know, go out there, buy some gear, use a return policy if you need to.
Right. Just have the desire to learn, to test it out. And one of those symptoms might be an interest in gear. That's the point.
Yeah.
I will say on that note, actually a quick side note for those that are more experienced and advanced, people that are beyond the first 5 years, that are put into a position of responsibility to teach, to give wisdom. This is another thing that I would recommend. Like it is, I think we can all agree here that it is important to probably your own growth as an engineer to have gone through a stage of overthinking stuff and to care about the gear, to forget about using your ears. And it would be foolish to say that that was not an integral and important part of where you are now. So like as much as it is smart to convince young people to not care, I think it is wise to give them the space to allow them to do things that are objectively not smart for the sake of their own context.
Yes. What is it? Not the greatest example, but let him be a strong student, not a safe student. Right. Let them burn their hand on the stove.
Right.
Yeah,
just the idea. Last thing too, it's like hopefully the first 5 years at no point, and maybe you will have moments of extreme pride, but hopefully it'll be less burdened by pride and more humble, right? By the end of the 5 years, like sometime between your 3 to 5 year mark, you'll actually probably be really good. And if you're in a very good state of mind, you won't realize it. Like if you're in a healthy internal locus kind of state of mind, you'll be insecure about your ability because now you know enough that you realize that you don't know enough.
Yeah.
You don't know a lot and there's a lot more to learn. But you'll actually, by the end of the 5 years, you'll actually be pretty good. So for the first 5 years, hopefully you'll still be pretty humble. You won't be saying shit. Maybe you will as a learning experience every once in a while, but you won't be regularly saying, get my name off the record. I don't like the way this sounds. Or like taking notes as personal offenses. Like these are the classic signs of a bad engineer that is filled with unaddressed insecurity. Right. So, saying things like, I don't like the way it sounds anymore, take my name off the record, or like taking notes personally, or like fighting with the artist with like creative direction. Like these are very signs of high immaturity that in the first 5 years, people don't develop those things. And if you have developed those things, those bad, reactive, how do you say, like complexes or insecurities, something's gone wrong in your first 5 years. Like, hopefully you maintain a state of mind, and it is very normal to maintain a state of mind of humility, of excitement, of passion, and like of non-attachment to like an ego. Like, you don't really have an ego.
Yeah.
You know, those things develop when disgruntled older people, more experienced people still don't receive the recognition that they believe that they deserve. Again, these are all things of the
ego.
Mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is all things of the mind. They're not real. What does someone deserve? The word deserve doesn't even fully exist in Japanese. Like, this is a, like, this is, yeah, like, what does that even mean? So anyway.
You know, it's kind of funny because, like, I was, I like, if you guys are ever looking to have a conversation about these things, about just, like, paths, ideas, and stuff like that, hit me up. I love talking about these kind of things with people. Because I was about to say, I was talking to my friend, but, no, like, so one of the guys that I met on tour, we stay in contact and we, you know, I noticed that me and him think alike in certain elements and we don't in others. So he's always a fun guy to talk to because sometimes we agree, sometimes we disagree, but our communication style with each other is very devil's advocate, where like we understand where each one is trying to go, but we're also trying to pull each other's strings kind of thing.
Nice.
But, you know, there's the point where people say they're satisfied with success, but what does success mean is very different for one another. And he asked me, he's like, when did you know you were kind of like satisfied with where you were? And I told him when I stopped having to chase people for information, deadlines, and everybody was on top of communication. Like, I felt the most successful when everything around me was efficient and everything was streamlined. Like, I don't think it was when I got a specific piece of gear, because, you know, when we owned the studio and we hadn't met each other, DK, like, you know, I've had tons of gear. I've gotten to play with a bunch of things, like buy it, sell it, whatever. And I used to do like resale a lot, so I got to play with a ton of gear. But like the most like satisfied moments of the career early on were when it was like, I was working with good managers for the artists and things like that who understood the artists, understood what was going on. So if there was a question of about a situation or something, you had a point of contact who knew what the situation was or whatever. Deadlines were always met. You weren't chasing payments. You're not, you know what I mean? Like, success looks very different for different people. Sometimes that means getting a manager or whatever. Sometimes that means getting a gold record, a platinum record, a Grammy nomination, a Grammy win. But I think you're very successful when the least of the desirable parts of your work are so efficient that they don't factor in into your day-to-day as much as you thought they did before. You know what I mean? Like, build systems, build better lanes of communication. Holy shit, did that make a difference? Like, that saved me from, like, burnout more times than not.
Right, of course. Yeah. I think that some of the wiser things, some of the things that we all wish we did in the first 5 years is, be better at communicating, be better at the people skills, be more on top of our shit, especially because at this stage, we'll be saying yes to everything. And like it would be better to stand out and you'll have more opportunities by just being on top of your stuff. And also the first 5 years, a lot of the game is like being perceived as someone to be respected.
Yeah.
There was no reason to hire me in my first 5 years. I had very limited portfolio, very little experience. But because I had a physical studio and like a third party, like brick and mortar location, I looked like I knew what I was doing. And that alone brought me a lot of clients. And like, as dumb as that is and as unfair as that is, or whatever other words that you want to use, it is important to be perceived as someone that knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's not good to have the pride around it, but like if that means having a third party location, if you live in a very cheap place or you could do it very affordably, or if you like deck out your garage or your room or whatever, like the fact that you care will naturally present itself in how you act, how you communicate, how you dress, how your room looks. Yeah, like even to the point of how you take care of yourself. Honestly, it will.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, okay, so now I'm going to very much kind of diverge from the common feelings and processes of the first 5 years. And I'm going to take a step back and talk about my personal experiences of the first 5 years and then the second 5 years and where I'm at now, which is the beginning of the third 5 years. First 5 years, very naive, very little ego, just having fun, trying to build a business. About year three or four is when I had my first baby. And then things started being serious, but still very humble. I didn't go to mix with the masters until year four or five, where for the first time I was given external third-party validation that I didn't know I needed so badly from Leslie Brathwaite, being told that I was good, right? Someone with Grammys telling me that I was good. The second 5 years was gaining a little bit more wisdom and borderline becoming prideful, having a lot of pride in my work, having a lot of ownership in my work. This led to a lot of good things. Self-confidence, demand for respect, as well as like systems and things like that. Those things aren't always bad, right? But it did cost me some stuff, which is like a little bit of humanity. I lost a little bit of that humanity there where like love for the craft, just like the this unsatiable desire to learn. Those things are now the focus. I'm going back to the first five-year focus in my year 10 to 15, which is funny. I'm like doing this full circle thing. And maybe this is a relatable experience. Maybe it's not. I haven't talked to a lot of other people about this as a concept. I don't know what it is for you, Lou. But like it's funny that I'm trying actively now to come back to the mindset that I had in my first five years. And it sounds like from the few other professional engineers that are doing decent, that it sounds like that's the case for a lot of people with some sprinkled ownership and pride from the second 5 years too. Like, not that, again, the good parts of that. Anyway.
No, I think that's totally relatable because I know I talked about it on the podcast, but like a year or two ago, I was saying, you know, like I took a break, not entirely, you know, I was still working, but I just wasn't actively pitching myself for work. What was it, like 2024, 2025, I was doing a lot of like work with Exhibit and doing a bunch of shows and stuff. But like 2024 timeline was when I was like, I'm just trying to listen to music for the enjoyment of listening to music again. Like I want to get back to just being naive about it again. Just, you know, practicing like openness to new things like I was before. Because like I said earlier, like, first 5 years, it's just like everything's mind blowing. You're just kind of excited and you're developing your view of how you want to move and what goals you have. You're shaping your goal list before you're really tackling it. The second 5 years for me were like very much focused tackle, like to the point where like I gained a ton of fucking weight. I'm glad I'm losing it, but like, holy shit that I gained weight fast because of how long I was just sitting in the studio, just sitting there eating five layer burritos as meals. Like, guys, Taco Bell's is not, I know Taco Bell is tasty, but put it down, boy. But nowadays, like, what was really cool is this past weekend we did the show, like I said, and me and DJ Flawless were hanging out by the lake because there was a beautiful lake right outside the casino. Like, it was like right there. You could go fishing 10 steps away from the exit of the casino. But we just sat on a rock and we just listened to music for like an hour, just talking about different things, exciting genres. Like, I was showing them like Japanese artists that I found, Korean artists that I found, Russian artists that I found. I have no idea what the fuck they're talking about, but I'm looking at like the work, the commitment to what they're putting together. And we're just talking about like, dude, like, isn't it crazy that we live in a time that like there's so many subgenres or very, very, very niche things that all of it now has technology to like really make it possible, even in your own bedroom, that by the time you find out about this artist, like they've already kind of developed their team. They've already kind of developed a workflow that works for them, but we've kind of returned to square one of just listening to music for the pure enjoyment of it. And then wanting to work with artists that drive that feeling back into us. And so I've become, for my third 5 years, very selective of who I work with. One, our communication has to be good. I do not deal with poor communication. I'm not okay with it. But if I'm not excited about the music, I'm okay giving a referral. it's not that I don't want to work with you. It's not that I don't want to see you succeed and stuff like that, but I just may not be the engineer for you at the moment. And that may bite me in the ass because not everything you're excited about is Grammy or platinum or whatever. But if you're not excited about your work, it's kind of tough to want to continue doing things. Like, I don't want to treat this like an office gig and say yes to everything like I used to in the first 5 years. But now it's like, okay, my one boundary is I need to like it. I could stay up all night if I really liked what I was working on. I don't really do all-nighters. Like Bob Horn sent me a mix that I have to master today. Yesterday. At 4 a.m, or I guess in LA time, it was 3 a.m. But like, I texted him back. I'm like, dude, what the fuck are you doing awake? You know? Cause like, we've talked about it before, even with Bob, where it's like, hey, you know, like he was doing the late nights and certain things like that. But like, he stopped doing those late nights for a good minute. But nowadays, like I've seen him like still push, the timelines and stuff like that just because he's got to get things done. Sure. But I haven't seen him like unhappy or anything like that. I'm sure he's like calibrated in a way that makes it work for him. But like a big thing that you hear a lot is like, I don't do late nights anymore. I don't do this anymore. And people are putting up these boundaries because they've burnt out because of these things. But you have to give yourself the ability to get burned out first. Like, don't just put up the boundary because you think you might burn out. Like, you should actually feel the burnout because you might end up finding out that this is actually the workflow that works for you. There's plenty of engineers who only do all-nighters. They sleep all day, work all night. But at a certain point of their career, they may want to switch it, and that's okay. But that means a big part of their clientele was built around that. So it's okay to take those gigs, but try to focus your niching as you go through your process. That way, when you start saying, I don't want to do this anymore, you've already built your other path too.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't know if this works in all scenarios, but the thing that I want to piggyback on that is I would suggest that you see boundaries as something that you discover, not something that you decide.
Yes. Like a boundary should be necessary, not optional.
Right. Like, because I think one that decides where boundaries are overly careful. And there is a time and a place for cautiousness, mm-hmm. but especially in the younger years, in the beginning stages of career, cautiousness becomes more of a hindrance than it does become, than it is a virtue. Yeah. I think that, that's the thing too. And this is where, again, I'm like reading this book for like the third time. This is I like this book. It's very easy. It's super basics. It's No Nonsense Buddhism for Beginners. it's like, I love coming back to this because it's just, yeah. Give me the broad concepts.
I downloaded every book you recommended.
This is a fantastic book of just like the basic precepts of and ideas. This has a lot to do with what we're talking about. And I read it this morning before we started recording. This is about Buddhism and a little bit more generalized, but I want it to be specific to what we're talking about right now, which mm-hmm. is the nuance of everything that we've said, right? I went to a helicopter flight school for a couple of years after college, so I can tell you firsthand that when you're piloting a helicopter, you have to continually use all four limbs to work the various button, bars, levers, and throttles that control the speed, direction, and elevation of the helicopter. You don't just lock these things into a place and relax. You're constantly adjusting everything in order to stay in the air. The Buddhist teaching of non-self sees living things in much of the same way. We're always making adjustments as we go. So there's no fixed, permanent version of us, only the continually changing combination of causes and condition. Are you more you when you're hungry or when you've recently eaten a meal? Is the authentic you the one that's well-rested or the one that's sleep-deprived because you've been laboring over a work project for the past week? Is the real you the one who was raised in a loving home or the one who endured an experience of trauma as a child? The Buddhist teaching of non-self says that there is no permanent or fixed you. There's only a complex web of inseparable, impermanent causes and effects. So it's the same idea, like kind of extrapolating that as a concept into what we're talking about right now is we've said many times before, everybody's experiences is different, but also how you see yourself within this experience. Mm-hmm. I've talked about some of the things that are identifying markers of my experience is that I was, the first 5 years was out of a major music city. I was a college student. I was a young married adult. And then towards the end of the first 5 years, became a young father. Mm-hmm. There are many different identity markers that change the way that I perceive the first 5 years. Here's the thing. The things that we talked about in this episode are not at all permanent objective markers for how to compare your own progress. These are just ideas from our own personal anecdotes and experiences that you may take or you may not relate to at all, depending on your circumstances. Everything about what we do is completely dependent on the people that we meet, the opportunities that we get, mm-hmm. possibly from the support or non-support of the people around us. It could be the fact that I only have 2 hours a week to dedicate to music, or that I honestly just don't care that much about me. I love music, but not at the level to eat pizza and eat shit for 80 hours a week, right?
Yeah.
And there is no better or best. These are just relatable situations that Lou and I have talked about in the past and have related to between the two of us. Again, mm-hmm. we are not like some sort of like hero or marker of success. That's not what it is.
Yeah, there's so much success to be had in both our careers that we're not at a point where we would call ourselves that.
Yeah, so yeah. Just like be open-minded to learning of your own situation, where your path kind of takes you. To a certain degree, I think to the average American, it's the advice of going with the flow is good advice. In a world where we are so incentivized to be goal-oriented, to have direction, to get what you want, to work through the suffering and to work through the trials, right? I think some good counter advice is to go with the flow and be open to where life takes you. Now, if you are the type of person that is very go with the flow to the point where you are directionless, then the practical advice that I would give is to have a little bit more direction, set up some goals and systems, right? And so it totally changes basis on the concept. And you are not any less or more than anybody else for being in a completely different position. One of either a lot of authority and a lot of support or of none, right? That's the nice thing about art and music in itself is that there's a lot of wealthy, high support individuals that it seems like have an unfair advantage, and they might. But at the same time, the cool thing about art is that those who receive it are not bound by a social class. It is fun and fascinating to see it to be fairly democratized, attention to be fairly democratized of all classes, of all genders, of all identities or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And you can get there. It's fun. And your path that you take is going to be different. And that's what makes it unique. That's mm-hmm. what makes it so people want to hire you. And so on that note, let's end this episode here. On that note is, yeah, dude, I honestly think, like, again, we go back to this time and time again. I don't think people understand the depth and the significance of this simple advice, which is to just have fun. Just enjoy the process. That advice sounds dumb, but the more that you learn, the more you understand how insanely true that is. And this is just beyond building your career. This is about the creation of art as well, the process of art. Love the process, you know, and just stay in love with art. Fall in love with art, stay in love with art, with music. And try to, and again, I like the way Rick Rubin kind of articulates it is like, practice a devotion to music. Music is beyond us. It's not something like there's ideas like we don't create music. We only just let it flow through us. I think that might necessarily be overthinking it a little bit too much, but I like the simplified concept of devote yourself to music. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying like if you're Like, I'm not saying like worship a new God if you're highly Christian, right? What I am saying is like, maybe the idea of like, if you're a, never mind. We're getting beyond myself here. I'm not going to do that, but like devote yourself to the craft of music, to fall in love with it, to do everything you can to be better at it and to find ways to improve. And I think you'll be fine. And yeah. Anyway, any other notes or ideas, Lou?
Don't be afraid to pivot. I'm not going to lie. I think that's a big thing for people. I think as people build their careers, they get locked into one thing or another. But do, once again, back into the idea of say yes to everything. Just say yes to everything. Like the whole time that, like, if you knew me and DK through In the Mix and stuff like that, the whole time I was doing that, something I never really talked a lot about is how much live sound I do. I did it every weekend for, you know, for years. But it's funny because like, there's a lot of people who say they won't cross that. I want to say this proverbial line, like going from studio to live, live to studio, because it's too hard, this and that. It's not, it's all the same shit at a certain point. So once again, going back to the, just have fun with it. Just try a bunch of things. Who cares about whatever, the role is, like, just try it out. Because if you love working with like live musicians in the studio, chances are you love working with live musicians live too. It is two different jobs, but they're almost hand in hand the same skill sets necessary. And I say almost because there are very distinct differences, but that's where the difference really lies in your enjoyment. There's just some role differences. There's skill set differences, but it doesn't mean you're not going to enjoy yourself. So don't be afraid to pivot if you're not fully enjoying what you're doing, thinking that that's what you wanted to do and you did it for so long, blah, blah, blah. Who cares? You might find out that the, like, I know a lot of people say they hate post-production because it feels very office-like. Some people love post-production. You might be one of those people. Just give it a shot. Do as much as you can. Say yes as much as you can. And just, once again, as DK said, enjoy yourself through the process. Forget about those boundaries early on. You should discover those through, necessity more than just over cautiousness. Burn your hand on that stove.
Right.
Yeah.
The first 5 years is a great time to download and learn from EQ cheat sheets and to zoom into YouTube videos to look at the specific settings of a plugin.
Yeah.
The second 5 years is a great time to realize that that's all a waste of time. But it, that processes, that order of operations is important.
Shout out to Tizio for saying the quiet part out loud, which is presets on your favorite plugin is just marketing, not actual usable things. Maybe on effects plugins, but you know.
Maybe it's also a good place to learn too, because like if you have presets, then you'll see what frequencies they, if it's an EQ, you'll see what frequencies they boost and they cut. And then you can kind of reverse engineer it to see why is this the preset. Same thing with a compressor. Like you, there's a lot to learn from the intention of the preset. Maybe not like they're not set and forget type tools, but I mean, there's something to learn there through reverse engineering.
Yeah.
Anyway, but on that note, thank you so much for mixing. I messed that up. I never do that. That's crazy.
Good sir.
Join our exclusive Patreon podcast. Get a shout out. MixingMusicPodcast.com/exclusive. Get access to ad-free episodes as well as our exclusive content every week. And it's still available on Spotify as well as through the Patreon app if you just want to listen through there. If you want to rate us 5 stars, that helps us a lot. We have near 400, I think, the last time I checked, 5 stars on Spotify. That helps us a lot. Same thing with Apple. If you want to do that, go do that. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. If you love the Mixing Music Podcast but want deeper, ad-free, technical episodes, we've got you covered. Our Patreon gives you access to over 250 exclusive episodes and new content every single week, all focused on mixing, mastering, and engineering at a high level. For just $4 a month, you get practical tips and techniques that will instantly improve your sound. Join now at MixingMusicPodcast/exclusive.
If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.